UFC 214 last night in SoCal. Dana White talking to the new and former UFC light heavyweight champion, John Bones Jones, inside the octagon right after he knocked out Daniel Cormier, courtesy of FS1. Welcome morning and welcome to another edition of Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman, and we are here every Sunday from 8 to 9 on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, the official home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We are also streaming live on LVSportsNetwork.com. The Twitter handle is Out of Line 1340 AM. That's at Out of Line 1340 AM. And you can find us on Facebook. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. The we I keep speaking about is not a mouse in my pocket. It's the Lotus Broadcasting soccer guru and future Nevada Hall of Fame producer, Magnum, who's always here with me. But let's face it, without you, there's no show. So if you have something on your mind, give Magnum a call. Turn down your radio and say what you got to say. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University. Today we'll start off talking a little soccer, because yesterday two of the most recognizable soccer clubs in the world, featuring some of the best players in the world, played a game against each other in the United States for the first time ever. Major League Baseball heads into the final 2 months of the regular season, and there are some pretty cool stories and streaks worth mentioning, plus the trading deadline right around the corner. And I still think the UFC is the most entertaining sport that I would never let anyone I care about participate in. But that being said, like several others, I watched and enjoyed almost every fight in the card last night. Come on, guys. It was pretty fresh. They were covering, I should speak of the person that's going to be on the show a little bit later on, Heidi Fang, who is in Anaheim. She was covering the UFC 214 last night. She covers the MMA and UFC. She's a videographer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal. And a little later, we'll do Blazin' and Fact This. And Las Vegas 51's media director, media relations director, Jim Gemma, will join us for this week's report. On tap at Bubby's University, earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. We're the only majors are mayhem and good times. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can enroll 24 hours a day. That's right. They're always open. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. To learn more, check out bubbysuniversity.com. El Clasico at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami featured Real Madrid and Barcelona for the first time ever on American soil. As a matter of fact, if you follow football, the greatest spectator sport in the world, according to fans all over the world outside of the United States, so you will know that Real Madrid and Barcelona have only played each other once outside of Spain prior to yesterday's event in Miami, and that was way back in 1982 in Argentina. What a hell of a game, Mags. The audience got what they paid for. Over 66,000 people attended this event. You had Mark Antony performing at halftime. I mean, this was like a Super Bowl, and yet it's a meaningless game to either one of these teams, really. It's kind of, aren't they more or less kind of just getting tuned up for the Super Cup in the, what is that, La Liga, the European League lies right around the corner?
Yeah, but it's a preseason game. I mean, there's really no other way to describe it. I mean, and quite honestly, I hate the concept of these two teams playing a preseason game in any part of the world, not Spain. To me, it's like if you take the Yankees and Red Sox or the Super Bowl and you move it out of the country and then you call it an exhibition game and say, it doesn't matter. I mean, like if we took the Super Bowl and sent it to, I don't know, France and played the game in Paris and said, hey, guess what? This is the Super Bowl, but it doesn't really count. I like the idea of European teams coming over here and playing preseason games in America. I support that 100%. What I don't support is having teams that play in the same league play against each other. And, you know, there was a disgraceful thing the other night. Manchester United played, I believe it was Barcelona. And they had Ronald McDonald leading the teams onto the field. And they had McDonald's all over everything. And it's like, you know what? Stop pushing American crap onto the beautiful game. And I understand it's a money grab for these people who organize this. You could sell, like, I went to go see Liverpool last year, my favorite club. They play Chelsea. They play Chelsea in the league twice a year. Sometimes they play them in other tournaments. I don't want to see Liverpool play Chelsea in the United States, just like I don't want to see Barcelona play Real Madrid in the United States. I want to see teams that don't play each other in tournaments or whatever you want to call this thing. Like yesterday, Liverpool played Hertha Berlin in Berlin. To me, that's a great thing. They're playing Bayern Munich on Wednesday because they don't play these teams normally. It's a preseason game. It takes away from it from this perspective. If I am the coach of Real Madrid, Zinedine Zidane, I am not going to do crap in this game because I know there's a chance I'm going to, well, I know for sure I'm playing Barcelona twice in the regular season. There's a chance I'm going to play them in the Copa del Rey, which is the Spanish Cup, and then I'm going to play them in another. I could end up playing them in the Champions League. I could end up playing my bitter rival five times. I'm not going to show them a damn thing. And I thought Real Madrid was a bit lethargic out of the gate. Obviously, no Cristiano Ronaldo will do that. But look, if you're trying to sell the game in the United States, you can do it without putting two bitter rivals against each other and calling it El Clasico. It's not El Clasico. It's a preseason friendly that means absolutely nothing. This game between these two sides, and it's impossible for American fans to really grasp it, it goes deeper than just soccer and sport. We're talking the state of Catalonia, which is where Barcelona is, and I can't remember the state that Madrid is in. It's a political rivalry that dates back to the days of the Spanish Civil War. These two cities hate each other. And to call it a meaningless preseason game, well, that's exactly what it is. And to sell it like it's some great, important game, well, to me, it's just crap. And maybe as a hardcore soccer fan, I'm taking it a little too hard. But for the casual fan, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's absolutely great as the casual fan. Hey, you know what? These are two of the best clubs in the world. You could have sold it Manchester United against Barcelona. You could have had Chelsea against Real Madrid. You could have had Juventus. You could have taken Ajax, another storied club, and put them here. But the goal of this tournament is to sell tickets, make a lot of money, and, yeah, get a little exposure for the sport in the United States. But the hardcore fans, even though there probably were a bunch there yesterday, because, let's face it, you don't get a lot of opportunities to see Barcelona or Real Madrid in the United States. I saw Real Madrid play a couple of years ago up in Salt Lake City, and it was pretty cool because they had a couple of guys who had just come off the World Cup team. But still, it's great if you're trying to sell it to people who don't really care about the sport. For people who are hardcore fans, it's kind of a slap in the face, I think.
Max, I'm over here cracking up because I love the passion. A 3 to 4 minute rant because of your passion and your love for professional football.
It's the best sport in the world.
Hey, listen, the best part about it is your passion. Here's what I'm going to tell you after your rant. Number one, I know you spoke English through that entire rant, but I understood about 50% of it because that is my passion for football. The cities, the leagues, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Here's what I'm going to tell you why I think you are incredibly wrong about this. Because I think, number one, 66,000 plus people showed up to see a meaningless Super Bowl, as you called it. Okay, first and foremost. Secondly, these fans were treated to Lionel Messi.
Oh,
they were treated to Suarez. They were treated to Neymar.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cool. You had Adamekin Sue there talking about it. I saw, what's his name, my Michigan State boy, the Golden State Warriors, Green.
Oh, Draymond Green.
Draymond
yeah.
Green was there wearing Neymar Jr.'s jersey. I loved it. I enjoyed it. It made me watch. I'm excited. I get to see, my God, the goal by Messi was spectacular early
right
on in the
yeah.
game. And then the way that Barcelona jumps out to a 2-0 2-0 lead, and yet Real Madrid comes back, and then they have to win it late. The whole thing, everybody got what they paid for, and I truly think that the American public, again, got reminded. I think it's been since the last World Cup. I got excited, and I've kind of drifted, Mags, and I think a lot of us have. I think this got us back into it and starting to get prepared for Russia and what could be coming up in the near future, and I'm excited about soccer. So to say that this wasn't a good thing, I understand the hardcore fans saying, I don't want to see these guys, traditionalists. I appreciate and respect that, but I'm not any of those. I'm a guy trying to become a football fan, and this event really sparked it, man. This was like a little plug-in for me, and I think for a lot of people to say, this is cool, and to get to see Messi's talents displayed live here in America, to get to see Neymar up close and realize why he is so internationally popular. And, you know, all these guys, Suarez, it was cool, Mags. And I'm learning these guys. I'm learning the sport. And something like this, look at the passion I have now for soccer that you've never seen before. So you're dead wrong. This was a great thing because we're not traditional. Now, you know what? I hope in 9-10 years from now, this something like this happens. And I'm sitting over there where you are saying, this sucks because I can't believe so-and-so's playing so-and-so. I want to be able to do that, and this is going to lead me into that direction. Does that make sense?
You know what? My opinion comes off as very elitist, so I get the visceral that's pointed at me. You know, it's great, you know? And from a perspective of trying to grow the game, absolutely, it's a great thing. You know, and I guess maybe I should be a little more receptive of
Mags,
the idea.
I started off my show talking about soccer. Okay,
I'll give
because of something that they, what do they call it? El Clasico. It starts my show. If you would have ever told me that I was going to begin one of my shows on a Sunday morning, where as much as I talk, I only have an hour, and I'm going to start my show with soccer, you better start saying this is a great thing, and they better start doing this. Because I'll tell you right now, I kind of want to see Manchester United. I just told you I saw that 30 for 30 special on George Best.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm getting into this. Even though, you know, it's like, didn't he kind of put Manchester United on the map?
Yeah, he was part of it. And you know, the great thing about soccer and why I love it, it doesn't take up my entire day. You know, if I sit down and watch an NFL game on a Sunday afternoon, and look, I'm not trying to say that soccer is going to replace the NFL. That'd be completely asinine. But you know, if the game comes on at 9 o'clock in the morning, by 11 o'clock in the morning, you're done. You're free. Your day is free. If I sit down and watch an NFL game, don't make plans. You know, because
it's worse than the East Coast. At least here, you're done by dinner time.
All the damn commercials and the NFL being such a corporate hack for everything. But you know, I'm going to give you the name of a guy, and he's a lesser known star to American fans. But if there's a guy in the world of soccer that you just wish you could be, it's Gerard Piqué. And I'll tell you why. Not only does he play for Barcelona.
I want to be Ronaldo, dude. I'm sorry.
Gerard Piqué gets to go home and sleep next to Shakira. So, to me, if there was one guy on the planet I could switch places.
Is Ronaldo married yet?
Yeah, I believe he just got married over the summer.
Okay, I was going to say,
Messi just got married.
It was Messi who just got married or is getting married. Ronaldo, you say he goes home, and yes, that would be a wonderful person to be with, but Ronaldo's like Derek Jeter.
Oh,
he's got
absolutely.
The world by the ass right now.
Oh, he's got. He is the most, for American fans,
dude,
he is as big.
Put it this way. For American fans like me that are getting acclimated, I would say Ronaldo is as big to the world as Michael Jordan was to us.
I think probably more so.
Not bigger. Yeah, I'm saying to us, Magnum.
Michael Jordan was to us.
Ronaldo, that's what Ronaldo is to the world.
He is the most recognizable athlete on the planet.
Oh, my God.
And it's not even close.
And he's freaking ridiculously good looking. It sucks to be a guy.
That's the worst part.
What doesn't he have? What quality? He's a nice guy, too. People say, you know what? For a guy that's practically untouchable, he's touchable.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man.
Well, the other thing is, not only is he just amazingly talented, the guy's a winner. I mean, he wins.
Passion.
You know, and it's like Portugal, they could, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. They could end up winning the World Cup next year, which would be absolutely amazing. But, you know, he's won multiple championships in Spain. Portugal won the European Championship last year. So, I mean, it's not like he's just this good-looking. He is Derek Jeter. Good-looking guy.
That's what I said.
On top of the world. Wins,
playing for a premier club.
Yeah, clutch. The guy gets the job done. I mean, he is. I think that's an excellent, you know, analogy. Derek Jeter and Cristiano Ronaldo are just, in our lifetimes, I don't know if we will see two athletes who exemplify what it is to be rock stars.
But my question to you is, going into break, I want you to think about this. And I want you to answer, actually, before we go into break, because we're coming back with something else. Is he, because, you know, we're comparing him to Michael Jordan. I'm comparing him to Michael Jordan in a popularity aspect, saying to the world, he is to them what Michael Jordan was to us. But is he, and is it fair to compare him? Is he better than Pelé was? Is he better than George Best? As far as a pure soccer, see, Michael Jordan, I can't say anybody is better than Michael Jordan. Ronaldo is probably as popular today as Pelé was back in the 70s, and maybe in history might go down as a more popular player. I would say Pelé is a better football player, was a better football. Look at the longevity of his career, first of all, the different accomplishments. He made Americans, he was the first person that made Americans turn their head and look at soccer.
I will say, as far as bringing the game to a worldwide audience, Pelé was more like Michael Jordan, because if we remember the Dream Team, Michael Jordan really transformed basketball into an international game. As far as a better player, and people might rake me over the coals for this, I think Ronaldo's the best player ever. For this reason.
You would know better than me.
The game today is better than it's ever been. You have people on every continent outside of Antarctica who put players in these professional leagues in Europe. You know, there's Australian guys who are playing in England. There's Japanese guys playing in Germany. So the game on an international level has never been bigger, more popular. There's better athletes playing the game. I mean, when Pelé played, there weren't a ton of great African players. Today, there's a ton of great African players. There were no Asian players playing in this game. I think on an international level, as far as like the World Cup goes, nobody will ever touch Pelé's accomplishments.
He revolutionized the game of soccer. Yes, he really did. He revolutionized
as far
on an international
as
level.
Being a better player, I think Ronaldo probably takes that.
That's crazy, because I thought, you know, like there's different categories of different players, and I always looked at Pelé as one of the best ball controllers. And that's just listening to different analysts, that man could absolutely control the soccer ball as good as anyone that's ever played the game.
Now, to be
trying
fair,
to take it away from him was almost impossible, is what I heard in his day. And again, I'm no guru. Those are just what I've heard from analysts.
Now, to be fair, I never actually got to see Pelé live in his prime, so it's very difficult for me to compare.
I saw him play on TV when I was a little boy, when he's playing for the Cosmos.
I was a little boy.
I was probably mid-70s, and I was watching a game on TV with my dad. I remember it years ago. I don't remember anything that happened, but my dad was strictly watching that game to see one man play soccer. And my dad, who was not a soccer fan at all, said, "Watch that guy. He's the best there ever was," and it was Pelé. Listen, we got to go to break. This is Out of Line. We're going to come back on the other side. Heidi Fang of the Las Vegas Review-Journal talking UFC 214 that went down last night. It was awesome. It was probably, put it this way, I am happy I rented the fight, and that's rare. A UFC fight paying $60 for, I did it. Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM, 1340 AM.
This fight, Semi-Rise, represents so much. It represents, you know, my journey and just staying faithful through my mistakes and through the criticism and things like that. I mean, it's been really tough, and I'm not saying poor me at all. I mean, I've been a dumbass, and I've done a lot of things to make myself a laughingstock. But man, I stayed faithful through it all, and now I'm here. So it symbolizes, you know, the power of not giving up, and making a decision to try to do better and getting your life back. And then just to close this chapter with Daniel Cormier, I don't even know why it was such a big thing in the first place. You know, I beat him fair and square the first time and off of steroids, and I beat him the second time off of steroids. So, you know, it just symbolizes so much, man. I feel complete, and I feel a sense of closure.
John Bones Jones, former and current light heavyweight UFC champion of the world, last night as he knocks out Daniel Cormier in the third round. And wow, the card was everything you could have expected from it. Like I said, I enjoy the hell out of watching the UFC. I would never let anyone I care for be a part of the UFC until they were able to book super fights and make some real money. Then, like I said, for $100 million, I'd step in the ring with Floyd Mayweather, and I'd spend $50 million before the fight getting some neurologists and everything to prepare to try to put me back together. But for $100 million, I mean, come on, these super fights are crazy. Joining us right now, Heidi Fang. She is, I don't know if she's still in Anaheim. She was there at the Honda Center yesterday night, I know that, for UFC 214. Again, the first time by myself I have ever rented a fight without going somewhere and pitching in. I wanted to see this fight. I got home late from a poker tournament, and I'm like, I'm renting it. I wanted to watch it, and I'll tell you what, I'm glad as hell I did. Heidi, was it as fun or more fun and exciting there at the Honda Center than it was me sitting in front of my big screen?
Oh, you were right. I was sitting in front of a big screen, too. I did have to leave Anaheim in Napa, covering the Raiders camp as well. So that's something to look out for on the website that I work with. But as far as the fight, yeah, man, it was just as thrilling as it was on your big screen.
Crazy stuff. I mean, from the very first fight, you know, it started off. And, I mean, Volkan Uzdemir, how do you say it? It's Uzdemir, correct?
I'm sorry, what was that?
The first fight, Volkan Uzdemir and Jimmy Manua.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, right from the get-go, 22 seconds in, I don't think anyone saw that coming. And this guy came out and exploded. And, of course, that's the light heavyweight division. That's somebody that is in, you know, that will be trying to, right? That was light heavyweight, was it not?
Right, it was.
Yeah.
And all the talks before was that if Jimmy Manua won that fight, that he would be facing the winner, John Jones versus Daniel Cormier. But with Jimmy Manoa suffering such a huge knockout, just devastating finish at the hands of Volkan Uzdemir, I think that Volkan may be the guy now. And he's had a pair of knockouts that have been just the same way, riveting knockouts back to back. And the fact that he's been able to pull that off, I think, is really made people recognize who he is. So this is something huge for Uzdemir to put himself on the map and also into title contention.
Well, it's funny with Uzdemir, you know, you say, other, you know, all of us, I definitely know who he is now, being a UFC fan. A lot of other people do, but it's funny. After Bones Jones won the title and they talked about his next fight, and of course, you heard him challenge Brock Lesnar at the end, but this is how much he knew the Russian after the fight.
Well, there's a lot of fresh blood in the light heavyweight division. We got this Russian guy that fought tonight and won. We got Jimmy. You know, there's fresh blood coming up, and I love to rule the light heavyweight division for a while longer. But super fights and things like that, I think now is the time for that. I feel like I don't really have much to prove in this division anymore. Well, people could argue that, but I feel like now is the time to branch out and experiment with some real big fights. Get paid. I haven't fought, man. I've been inactive, so I need a check.
Bones Jones talking about a check and super fights. You know, Heidi, it seems like, you know, again, he didn't even know who, even how to pronounce Uzdemir's name or know who he was. That's how important he is to John Bones Jones. My point was, he's thinking about big paydays. And it's amazing, since McGregor and Mayweather, I think a lot of guys, now granted, John Jones, a lot of people talk about pound for pound, and I love that statement, might be the greatest UFC fighter of all time. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. Athletic, long, can combat a wrestler. It doesn't matter what style, John Jones can give him a little bit of time and he'll have an answer for you. But he's looking ahead to a guy that they keep saying 40 pounds, that's 60 pounds heavier than him. Brock Lesnar, granted, a 5-3 record, but this guy is an animal, a machine, and can kill people. And yet John Jones is like, let's go, and he doesn't care because it's all about the greenbacks. Super fights. Is this what we're going to start seeing, is these crossover fights? Brock Lesnar goes to wrestling, is going to come back now. This is what we're going to see so people can get big seven-figure paydays?
You know, I would hope I live in the MMA bubble. I would hope that we start getting away from the crossover fight. But for this one, I know why they want to do it. It is a huge fight. Putting Brock Lesnar up against Jon Jones is something that I think the fans have been clamoring for. It would just kind of prove to Jon Jones' dominance as an athlete and what he can accomplish if he could definitely, you know, defend, you know, I don't know what they would be doing as far as any titles or setting this up. As it'd be just a super fight, I think, but no titles on the line. But I think that with Jon Jones going up against Brock Lesnar, it would be a spectacle again, like, you know, McGregor, Mayweather. It does seem that it's going to happen. That does seem like it's in the works. So I think we will see that fight towards December of this year. And Brock Lesnar is a beast. I mean, that's what they call him in wrestling world, is the beast incarnate. So I think that we will see him and that he will be going up against that. And the thing is the USADA question. Can Brock Lesnar come through and get into that USADA testing pool and be clean? That's the question.
Big question. Well, Dana White, of course, after the fight was asked about that, because Lesnar again grabbed the microphone at the end, or not Lesnar, excuse me, Bones Jones grabbed the microphone, challenged Lesnar, dropped the microphone and went away. And Brock Lesnar is not a guy that's going to back away from any challenge. Matter of fact, things like that are going to piss him off. And here's what Dana White had to say after the fight about a potential Brock Lesnar, a John Bones Jones fight.
Think is the next step.
Well, Brock Lesnar just told the AP, be careful what you wish for, young man. Well, Brock Lesnar, first of all, you know, I haven't talked to Brock Lesnar. Even if he came back, you saw it, he's got to wait 6 months and be on the program for 6 months. So he'll fight somebody before that. I don't know who right here off the top of my head, but he'll fight again.
Well, he's talking about John Jones will fight again before he fights Lesnar. But now you can already tell, it sounds like Dana White, when they first started talking about Mayweather-McGregor, you can just tell Dana, the dollar signs, I could almost see him in his eyes when he was talking about it. It's like, there's no way we're walking away from this kind of money. Whatever the fans want, it's not whatever the fans want. It's whatever is going to put the most money into the UFC and into his pocket, and that's what's going to happen. And I love Dana White for what he's done and all that. I just have thought for a long time UFC fighters should be paid better, and because they're not, that's what is creating these super fights and crossovers. That's the way they're going to get paid the best. And you even heard it out of Jones's mouth. But interesting fight. That fight, I thought was phenomenal. I thought that the tactical part of the fight by Jones was incredible. I had him losing the first two rounds. A lot of people thought Jones won the first round, Cormier won the second round, and then, of course, we know what happened in the third. I thought it was very close in the first, but I did think Jones did lose the first round because Cormier hit him with some really good punches, knocked his mouth guard out for a second. But I'll tell you what, at the end, the tactical part of the fight was great, and you could see Jones was well-schooled. He knew that the tendency of Cormier was to drop his hand and lean in, and he just waited. It's like the third round, the first chance he got, he laid that high left leg kick on him, and that was it. The rest of it was over. The official, I was surprised that like one or two extra punches probably created more of a concussion than Cormier had already. But that was a vicious beating at the end, and you saw the dominance of John's Bones Jones.
Yeah, definitely. I did have actually the first round the other way. I thought that Bones did pick that round because you had a whole 4 minutes, I think, of Jon Jones doing work against Daniel Cormier there. And Cormier did come on very strong in the last 30 seconds of the first round. So when that happened and he was really putting together his punches, he's getting those uppercuts in close quarters, I thought that that worked well for him as a strategy. And you could definitely see the composure of Daniel Cormier was different in this fight because compared to the last fight, he wasn't as mentally into the trash talk. You couldn't see him being distracted by that and all that had led up to the fight. So this fight, I was really thinking Daniel Cormier was finally putting it all together against Jon Jones. And at the moment there, I was like, this is it. Jon Jones, you know, maybe all those allegations that Daniel Cormier was making about steroids were on point. Maybe Jon Jones's layoff had been too much for him. But then he comes in strong in the third round, like you said, with that head kick and just in Daniel Cormier's reign in devastating fashion.
Well, the danger for all of UFC, anyone that's going to get in the ring with John Bones Jones from this point forward, is something happened from last April till now, and it's called maturity. And that is a very, very dangerous asset to add to John Jones's repertoire now, is maturity, because the maturity is what had the patience for him to wait until he got the opening, something he might not have done even a year year and a half ago. He's definitely grown up. You can see the hunger, the desire to be the best right now. And, of course, the spectacle that they'll call David versus Goliath will happen. And, man, John Jones can beat Brock Lesnar. It's just that I don't think he can escape if Lesnar gets him on the ground. I mean, I don't know how you get out from under that. But I don't put anything past John Jones. I agree he may be the greatest fighter of all time. Listen, we are running out of time, Heidi. One more thing. There's some other fights. Obviously, the biggest disappointment fight was Maya against Woodley. A lot of people said it's a disappointment. I didn't think so because I thought truly that Tyron Woodley fought the perfect fight. The only way you can fight Damian Maya is to stay off the ground, and the object is to win, not to impress the audience. You want to keep the belt, and he did exactly what he had to do. To me, that's the only way to fight this guy. He's been on a roll. He'd won 7 straight fights. You didn't want to mess with him. And again, I'd get your opinion, but we're out of time. The one I wanted to talk about last before I let you go was Cyborg and Evinger, the championship for the featherweight. Chris Cyborg, man, she is, talk about a beast. I don't know what else to call this woman. She is as good as anything I've seen. And after the fight, you know, we're talking about super fights, and this is what bothered me. Again, after the fight, it's not a super fight, but she's picking her next opponent, saying Heidi Holm, just because Heidi Holm had that big win, as we know. Holly Holm. I'm messing up. But Holly Holm, first thing she said afterwards, and to me, it's like, it's all about getting paid again. And it was like, no one's going to be able to fight Cyborg, but she can't think of anyone to fight. So this is what she had to say after the fight when they said, who's going to be your next opponent?
Next move, I would like to fight Holly Holm. I think she's a great fighter. And then she's a bigger girl like me. And then she's fighting already at 145. Maybe she's going to fight me at 145. I think all fans are going to like because she's a strike. And let's see, do that. Maybe next year, I don't know.
She'll beat Holly Holm's ass, won't she?
I think right now Cyborg is indestructible. Anybody that you put her up against, especially because there is not yet a complete 145-pound division, they kind of are just bringing Cyborg opponents from the 135-pound division. So she hasn't really had a competitor her size, her weight, that can defend against the skill set that she brings to the table. She has strong jiu-jitsu, she has strong wrestling, she has strong striking. So when you put somebody in the cage against her, you can't just bring a specialist. Holly Holm is great at boxing, but can she handle herself on the ground against Cyborg is a question. Can she defend against the takedown is a question. So if Holly Holm gets in there, I would rather see Holly Holm go up and get another win, build off of what she had, because before that she was in quite a slump. So I would rather see Holly Holm stay at 35 and build off of the win that she had. But if that's what Cyborg wants and you bring Holly Holm, a former champion, in against Cyborg, I have no problem with the fight. I would just rather see some competitors that are 145-pound fighters naturally come in and fight her, like Megan Anderson, the fight that was originally planned to happen instead of Tonya Evinger. So that's one that's been on my radar, is I would rather see Megan Anderson right now than Holly Holm.
Makes perfect sense, and I can answer both of your questions with Holly Holm. Is how will she do on the ground? She'll get her ass kicked. How will she do on her feet? She'll get her ass kicked. It's easy. Those questions. But what I will say about Tonya Evinger, former construction worker, this woman, it was simply watching a hard-headed bully fight Chris Cyborg, and that's probably what Tonya Evinger is. She stood in there. She was tough, but there was nothing tactical. All it was just resiliency. She was determined to stay as long as she could, and she did a good job of it. And also, Cyborg really was tactical. She let her off the mat at one point in time. It was almost like they told Cyborg, look, we need this to go a little bit to create interest. I don't want to say fixers or anything, but it looked to me like Cyborg could have knocked her out at any time she wanted to, and she pussyfooted around a little bit, which bothered me. I thought, just knock her out already. What are we doing here?
Yeah, I think she was respecting Tonya Evinger a little bit. Evinger is also an invicted champion. She's a bantamweight champion with the other women's promotion that is MMA. So for her, I think that Evinger actually does hit hard. She is a good fighter, and I think that Cyborg was respecting that a little bit in the beginning and trying to figure her out, since she was a later replacement opponent and she was expected to face somebody different. So trying to figure her out, her timing, her range, and being able to attack at the right time, I think was what had caused a little bit of that hesitation in the beginning. And you have to remember, this is a big spot for Cyborg. It was the thing that she had really wanted all the way along her UFC career. And she wasn't able to have. First of all, being able to fight at featherweight, and then secondly, a shot at the belt. So for her, this was a huge moment. So there may have been a little bit of an adrenaline dump there as well.
Okay, I will say I'm going to call Dana White and get you a personal job with him because I disagree. I think she was told to like look ease up a little bit. I know that sounds terrible, but watching it intimately, I thought yes, she was sizing her up, but I still felt she could have knocked her out. Listen, Heidi, I love having you on the show. We definitely need to do this more. I'm getting more and more educated on MMA and UFC all the time. Like I said, I'm really entertained by it. I just think it's dumb. I would never let anybody I know or care about get in an octagon with anyone. I told my son, if you ever want to fight UFC, what we're going to do is go in the garage, I'm going to kick the crap out of you, and then I'm going to throw $5 at you, because that's what it's like being a UFC fighter. That's my opinion. but the truth of the matter is it is very entertaining. You can find her and follow her on Twitter, at Heidi Fang, and Fang is spelled F-A-N-G. That's correct? That's your Twitter handle?
Yep, that's it.
Perfect. Follow her there, again, with the LVRJ. Does a great job. MMA, check her out. And don't you have, isn't there a site or somewhere they can go and they can watch some videos that you put together?
Yes, coveringthecage.com. That's where we host all the MMA footage for the Review Journal.
Yeah, I've watched a couple with her and Adam Hill. Good stuff, man. Heidi, appreciate you. We'll definitely have you on again.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Again, Heidi Fang, listen, we're going to take our last quick break. We got to fly here to get through this. Out of line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango, in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital. They feature two happy hours every day, and there is no place better in America to go than Buffalo Wild Wings for wings, beer, and sports every Monday night during the NFL season. I am there hosting the best Monday night parties in Las Vegas. That is we give away replica jerseys, wing parties, you name it. Again, the 215 and North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Buffalo Wild Wings, the best place for wings, beer, and sports. And it is time for Blazin'. Well, forget about the great play that Escobar made yesterday in that Red Sox-Royals game in the 10th inning. Great play on his backside, threw the ball to first place. And the throw home was perfect, too. However, Sandy Leon ended up getting around it with a great slide. But the truth was, it was Eduardo Nunez, who came over from the Giants just on Tuesday night. For two minor league pitchers, he has done nothing but help the Red Sox to a couple of victories and a big game, two home runs, 3 for 6, including that ground out that turned out to be the winning RBI. I would say Eduardo Nunez is blazing. What do you got for me, Mags?
Well, I'll stay in the American League. I'm going to go with the Cleveland Indians, winners of 9 straight games. They now have a 3-game lead in the division. The only reason it's not more is that the second place team, Kansas City, up until yesterday, had won 9 or 8 straight games. And, you know, the Royals actually have gotten themselves back in the wild card mix. But Cleveland Indians right now, they are really starting to play well. Their run differential plus 103, winners of 9 straight. And they're starting to play like the team that made the World Series last year. They're really starting to come around as a team. And they're on fire. And, you know, Houston is the team everybody's looking at. But I would not sleep on the Cleveland Indians.
Don't sleep on them. Free agency just about to, I should say the trading deadline's right around the corner. And who's going to get Justin Verlander? Big question. I think he's going to end up staying in Detroit. That is Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Stone's throw from Centennial Hospital. Two happy hours every day. America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. Again, that is Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. Hey, I'm going to do a real quick fact this. It's a fact. There are local poker tournaments all over Vegas. This is my opinion. And not just because they sponsor the show, but Binion's has the best local tournament in Vegas. Every Saturday at 2 o'clock, it's a $175 buy-in, $10,000 guarantee. They give you $20,000 in starting chips. The first 8 levels, 30 minutes the next level's all the way to the final table, 40 minutes. You get to the final table at 60 minutes. It is great poker, amateurs every week. So this is my opinion. If you're going to play in a local tournament, check out Binion's, man. It's great. Time now for the Las Vegas 51s report coming your way by the Las 51s. Las Vegas 51s are out of this world and joined right now by Media Relations Director Jim Gemma. Jimmy, how you doing, man? The 51s got a win yesterday.
Brian and Magnum, hope all is well. The opener of this season-long 12-game, 13-day homestand. Team finally gets to settle in here for a while. 3-0 win last night over Colorado Springs. They're the AAA affiliate of the Brewers. They actually have the second-best record in the league at 63-41. But the Mets picked up Jonathan Alabaldejo out of the independent league. He did pitch in the big leagues. He's a veteran, but he pitched great last night, and Chasen Bradford pitched the ninth inning to get his 11th save. Dominic Smith just continues to have a great first season here in Las Vegas. Double home, Ahmed Rosario, then Kevin Pilecki followed with a two-run homer in the seventh. So we had a really nice crowd last night, 6,600. Can't say enough about the fans coming out and supporting the team. I know next weekend, the Oklahoma City Dodgers are here, so I know there'll be a lot of Dodger fans.
Well, Jimmy, I told you, we were texting yesterday, and I said it's still, to me, one of the greatest economical, best-kept secrets nights out in Las Vegas. I love going to the games. I just think it's awesome. You don't spend a great deal of money. You are seeing top-notch players. And as you kind of mentioned, the top of the 51's lineup, you've got major leaguers 1-4 in Gavin Cheehiney, Ahmed Rosario, Dominic Smith, and Kevin Plawecki, as you mentioned. That is a lot of fun to go watch. Those guys can make a lot of noise on any given night. You can go watch up Las Vegas throw up 10 or 11 runs. They can definitely score. You know, the problem's probably been more so with pitching. It's just been tough. You can't have a great team every year. And this year, the 51s, as far as record goes, might not have the greatest team, but they're still very entertaining. And you are probably seeing in Dominic Smith and Ahmed Rosario two future Major League Baseball All-Stars.
Well, with Lucas Duda getting traded earlier in the week to Tampa Bay, it's basically Dominic Smith at first base and Ahmed Rosario at shortstop. It's basically their jobs to lose next spring training. So I know both of those players, sooner than later, that they're going to get called up, if not very soon, but September 1st for sure. So we'll just see how it all plays out. It's been a difficult season, obviously, up in New York, and it's filtered down here.
Jimmy, two quick questions because we're just about out of time. Chasen Bradford back down. How's he taking it, man? I love the guy. I know it had to be a little disheartening. He waited forever for that call. He wasn't pitching bad up there. He was kind of getting in situations where the team wasn't playing well around him. But is he all right?
He's him and Paul Sewald, the two Las Vegas guys that played with us. You know, obviously, Paul is not coming back, which is great, but no, he's doing great. He's got a great attitude. He's just a great person and a great representative of Las Vegas. He's pitched well since he's come back. He's on the 40-man roster, so hopefully when the rosters expand, he'll go back up in September.
I surely hope so. How about, again, a 12-game homestand just started yesterday, upcoming games, and most importantly, what are some of the real quick upcoming promotions in the next 12 days?
Well, the big series is the Oklahoma City Dodgers next Thursday and Sunday, August 3 through the 6th. We do have, obviously, Budweiser Dollar Beer Night, and then Fireworks is next Friday, and then we have another cooler bag night kind of around school coming back.
He is Jim Gemma, Public Relations Director for the Las Vegas 51s. I was at Disneyland for my birthday on Tuesday. I saw the fireworks. They're not as good as the ones you have. Thanks, Jimmy. We'll see you soon, my friend.
Thanks for having me on. Take care.
You got it. Out of line, out of time. We want to thank Heidi Fang. Thank Jim Gemma. Thank Producer Magnum. We're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9 a.m., Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 a.m., home of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for your understanding, and I want to thank the crowd tonight, the people of Las Vegas who were here. And